The following is a reading of John Owen's commentary on Hebrews chapter 2. Therefore, we ought to give the more earnest heed to the things which we have heard, lest at any time we should let them slip. For if the word spoken by angels was steadfast, and every transgression and disobedience received a just recompense of reward, how shall we escape if we neglect so great salvation, which at the first began to be spoken by the Lord and was confirmed unto us by them that heard him? John Owen says that he gives them this exhortation to manifest that the duty which he exhorts them to is of general concern to all to whom the gospel is preached, so that he lays no singular burden on them alone, and that he might not as yet discover to them any jealousy of their inconstancy, or that he had entertained any severe thoughts concerning them, the apprehensions of which are apt to render the exhortation suspect, the minds of men being ready enough to disregard that which they are persuaded to, if they suspect that undeserved blame lies at the bottom of the exhortation. The like condescension to this upon the like account we may see in Peter in 1 Peter 4, verse 3. These are the persons spoken to. That which is spoken to them consists in an exhortation to the duty and a special enforcement of it. The exhortation and duty is in the first words. The more abundantly to attend to the things which you have heard. And the enforcement of this is in the close of them, lest at any time we should let them slip or we should let them flow out. And the exhortation is expressed a special circumstance of it, the duty itself, and a manner of performing it. The first is included in that word, more abundantly, which may refer either to the causes of the attendance required, or to the manner of its performance. In reference to this duty that he exhorts them to, there is expressed the object of it, the things which you have heard. So the apostle chooses to express the doctrine of the gospel with respect to the way and manner in which it was communicated to them, namely by preaching, for faith comes by hearing, and hearing is of the word preach, Romans 10:14-15 and Romans 10:17. And in this he magnifies the great ordinance of gospel preaching, as everywhere he makes it the great means of begetting faith in men. The Lord Christ himself first preached the gospel, Acts 1:1, Acts 1:3. Concerning him it was said from heaven, hear him, Matthew 17:5. As he who revealed the Father from his own bosom, John 1:18. From him the gospel came to be the word heard. When he had finished the course of his personal ministry, he gave the same work to others, sending them as the Father sent him. They also preached the gospel and called it the word, that is, that which they preached. So in the Old Testament it is called a hearing, or that which was heard being preached. So the apostle insists on and commends to them not only the things themselves in which they had been instructed, but also the way in which they were communicated to them, namely by the great ordinance of preaching, as he further declares in Isaiah 53:3. This is a means of their believing, as a ground of their profession. They were diligent to remember, consider, and attend to. The duty itself directed to and the manner of its performance are expressed in the word which means to attend or give heed. What kind of attendance is denoted by this word was in part before declared. To attend to it is to attend it with reverence, assent, and readiness to obey. So Acts 16:14, God opened the heart of Lydia to attend to the things that were spoken. Not to give them the hearing only, there was no need of the opening of her heart for the mere attention of her ear, but she attended with readiness, humility, and resolution to obey the word. the effect of which attention is expressed by the apostle in Romans 6, verse 17. To attend then to the word preached is to consider the author of it, the manner of it, the weight and concern of it, the ends of it, with faith, subjection of spirit, and constancy, as we shall with our apostle more at large afterwards explain. The duty exhorted to being laid down, a motive or enforcement to it is subjoined, taken from the danger that would ensue from the neglect of it. And this is either from the sin or punishment that would attend it, according to the various interpretations of the word, flow out, or let them slip, or fall, before mentioned. It is to signify to fall or perish. Then the punishment of the neglect of this duty is intimated. We shall perish as water that is poured on the earth. Thereunto is the frail life of man compared, 2 Samuel 14, verse 14. The sense of the word is embraced by few expositors, yet has a great countenance given to it by the ensuing discourse, 2 Samuel 14, verses 2 and 3. And for that reason, it is not unworthy our consideration. For the design of the apostle in those verses is to prove that they shall deservedly and assuredly perish who should neglect the gospel. And the following particles, and if, in 2 Samuel 14, verse 2, may seem to relate to what was spoken before, and so to yield a reason why the unbeliever should so perish as he had intimated, which, unless it be expressed in this word, the apostle had not before at all spoken to. And in this sense, the caution here given is that we should attend to the word of the gospel, lest by our neglect of it we bring upon ourselves inevitable ruin and perish as water that is spilled on the ground, which cannot be gathered up again. But the truth is that the word prefixed will not be well reconciled to this sense and interpretation unless we should suppose it to be redundant and insignificant. It is, then, our sinful losing of the word and the benefits of it which the apostle intends. And in the next verse, he proceeds to prove what he had asserted in this verse, but goes on to other arguments to the same purpose. Taken from the unquestionable event of our neglect of the word and losing its benefits. The special reason, therefore, why the apostle expresses our losing of the doctrine of the gospel by lack of diligent attendance to it is to be inquired after. Generally, the expression is looked on as an allusion to leaking vessels, which allows the water that is poured into them one way to run out in many ways. It is our duty to retain the word which we have heard, and therefore it is not said that the word flows out, but that we, as it were, pour it out. But we may yet inquire a little further into the reason and nature of this allegory. The word or doctrine of the scriptures compared to showers and rain, Deuteronomy 32, verse 2. My doctrine shall drop as a rain, my speech shall distill as a dew, as a small rain upon a tender herb, and as the showers upon the grass. We are now entering on the practical part of the Epistle to the Hebrews, and that which is of great importance to all professors at all times, especially to such as are, by the good providence of God, called into the condition in which the Hebrews were when Paul thus treated with them, that is, the condition of temptation, affliction, and persecution. And we shall, therefore, the more distinctly consider the useful truths that are exhibited to us in these words, which are these that follow. 1. Diligent attendance to the word of the gospel is indispensably necessary to perseverance in the profession of it. Such a profession, I mean, as it is acceptable to God, or will be useful to our own souls. The profession of most of the world is a mere not renunciation of the gospel in words, while in their hearts and lives they deny the power of it every day. A saving profession is that which expresses the efficacy of the word to salvation, Romans 10, verse 10. This will never be the effect of a lifeless attendance to the Word. And therefore, we shall first consider what is required to the giving heed to the gospel here commended to us. And there are in it, amongst others, the things that follow. Number one, we must value the grace that is offered in it. And of the Word itself on that account, it denotes such an attendance to anything as proceeds from an estimate or value of it answerable to its worth. If we do not have such thoughts of the gospel, we can never attend to it as we ought. And if we consider it not as that in which our chief concern lies, we consider it not at all as we ought. The field in which is hid the treasure is so to be heeded as to be valued above all other possessions whatsoever, Matthew 13, verse 44. They who esteem not the marriage feast of the King above all avocations and worldly occasions were shut out as unworthy, Matthew 22, verses 7 and 8. If the gospel be not more to us than all the world besides, we shall never continue in a useful profession of it. Fathers and mothers, brothers and sisters, wives and children must all be despised in comparison of it and in competition with it. When men hear the word as that which puts itself upon them, the attendance to which they cannot decline without present or future inconveniences, without considering that all the concerns of their soul lies bound up in it, they will easily be won utterly to neglect it. According as our esteem and value of it is, so is our heeding of it and attendance to it, and not otherwise. Hearkening to the word is to a song of him that has a pleasant voice, which may please or satisfy for the present. It's that which profits not men, and which God abhors, Ezekiel 33, verse 32. If the ministry of the gospel is not looked on as that which is full of glory, it will never be attended to. This the apostle presses in 2 Corinthians 3, verses 8 and 9. Constant high thoughts of, then, of the necessity, worth, glory, and excellency of the gospel, as on other accounts, so especially the author of it and the grace dispensed in it, is the first step in that diligent heeding of it which is required of us. Want of this was that which ruined many of the Hebrews to whom the apostle wrote, and without it we shall never keep our faith firm to the end. Number two, diligent study of it and searching into the mind of God in it, that so we may grow wise in the mysteries of it, is another part of this duty. The gospel is the wisdom of God. 1 Corinthians 1:24. In it are laid up all the stores and treasures of that wisdom of God, which ever any of the sons of men shall come to an acquaintance with in this world. Colossians 2, verses 2 to 3. And this wisdom is to be sought for as silver, and to be searched after as hid treasures. Proverbs 2, verse 4. That is, with pains and diligence, like to that of those who are employed in that inquiry. Men, with indefatigable pains and danger, pierce into the bowels of the earth in the search of those hid treasures that are wrapped up in the vast womb of it. Silver and treasures are not gathered by every lazy passenger on the surface of the earth. They must dig, seek, search, who intend to be the partakers of them, and they do so accordingly. And so must we do for these treasures of heavenly wisdom. The mystery of the grace of the gospel is great and deep, such as the angels desire to bow down and look into, 1 Peter 1, verse 12, which the prophets of old, notwithstanding the advantage of their special revelations, inquired diligently after, 1 Peter 1, verses 10 and 11. Whereas now, if any pretend, though falsely, to a revelation, they have immediately done with the word, as that which by the deceit of their imaginations they think beneath them, when indeed it is only distant from them and is really above them. As if a man should stand on tiptoe on a molehill and despise the sun appearing newly above the horizon as one beneath him. Diligent, sedulous searching into the word belongs to this heeding of it. Psalms 1 verse 2. Or a laboring by all appointed means to become acquainted with it, wise in the mystery of it, and skilled in its doctrine. Without this, no man will hold fast his profession, nor does any man neglect the gospel, but he that knows it not, 2 Corinthians 4, verses 3 and 4. This is a great principle of apostasy in the world. Men have owned the gospel but never knew what it was, and therefore leave the profession of it foolishly as they took it up lightly. Studying of the word is the security of our faith. Number 3, mixing the word with faith is also required in attending it. Hebrews 4 verse 2. You might just as well not hear as to not believe. Believing is the end of hearing, Romans 10, verses 10 and 11. And therefore Lydia's faith is called her attention, Acts 16, verse 14. This is a life of heeding the word, without which all other exercise about it is but a dead carcass. To hear and not to believe is in the spiritual life what to see meat and not to eat is in the natural. It will please the fancy, but will never nourish the soul. Faith alone realizes the things spoken to the heart and gives them subsistence in it. Hebrews 11, 1. Without which, as to us, they flow up and down in loose and uncertain notions. This, then, is the principal part of our duty in heeding the things spoken, for it gives entrance to them into the soul, without which they are poured upon it as water upon a stick that is fully dry. Laboring to express the word received and a conformity of heart and life to it is another part of attending it. This is the next proper end of our hearing, and to do a thing appointed to an end without aiming at that end is no better than not doing of it at all. In some cases, much worse. The apostle says of the Romans that they were cast into the mold of the doctrine of the gospel. Romans 6, verse 17. It left upon their hearts an impression of its own likeness, or produced in them the express image of that holiness, purity, and wisdom which it reveals. This is to behold with open face the glory of the Lord in a mirror, and to be changed into the same image, 2 Corinthians 3, verse 18. That is, the image of the Lord Jesus Christ manifested to us and reflected upon us by and in the mirror of the gospel. When the heart of the hearer is quickened, enlivened, spirited with gospel truths, and by them is molded and fashioned into their likeness, and expresses that likeness in its fruits or a conversation becoming the gospel, then is the word attended to in a right manner. This will secure the word a station in our hearts and give it a permanent abode in us. This is the indwelling of the word, in which there are many degrees, and we ought to aim that it should be plentiful. Watchfulness against all opposition that is made either against the truth or power of the word in us belongs also to this duty. And as these oppositions are many, so ought this watchfulness to be great and diligent. And these things have we added for the further explanation of the duty that is pressed on us by the apostle, the necessity of which, for the preservation of the truth in our hearts and minds, will further appear in the ensuing observation. There are a number of times and seasons in which, in several ways and means whereby men are in danger to lose the word that they have heard if they attend not diligently to preserve it at any time or by any way or means. This our Savior teaches us at large in the parable of the sower of seed, which was retained but in one sort of ground of the four in which it was cast, Matthew 13. And if the experience of all times and ages confirms, yea, few there are at any time who keep the word heard as they ought. We may briefly name the seasons in which, and the ways whereby, the hearts and minds of men are made as leaking vessels to pour out and lose a word that they have heard. 1, some lose it in a time of peace and prosperity. That is a season which slays the foolish. Jeshurun waxes fat and kicks. According to men's pastors, they are filled and forget the Lord. They feed their lusts high until they loathe a word. Quails often make a lean soul. A prosperous outward estate has ruined many a conviction from the word, yea, and weakened faith and obedience in many of the saints themselves. The warmth of prosperity breeds swarms of apostates, as the heat of the sun does insects in the spring. 2, some lose it in time of persecution. When persecution arises, our Lord says, they fall away. Many go on in profession until they come to see the cross. This sight puts them to a stand and then turns them quite out of the way. They thought not of it and do not like it. We know what havoc this has made amongst professors in all ages, and commonly where it destroys the bodies of 10, it destroys the souls of 100. This is a season in which stars fall from the firmament in reference to innumerable precepts are made for watchfulness, wisdom, patience, enduring that are given us in the gospel. 3, some lose it in a time of trial by temptation. It pleases God in His wisdom and grace to allow sometimes an hour of temptation to come forth upon the world and upon the church in the world for their trial. 3:10. And He does it that His own by this may be made conformable to their head, Jesus Christ, who had His special hour of temptation. Now in such a season, temptation works variously according as men are exposed to it, or as God sees fit that they should be tried by it. Everything that such days abound with shall have it in the force of a temptation. And the usual effect of this work is that it brings professors into a slumber. 25:5, in this state many utterly lose the word. They have been cast into a negligent slumber by the secret power and efficacy of temptation, and when they awake and look about them, the whole power of the word is lost and departed from them. With reference to these and the like seasons, it is that the apostle gives us this caution, to take heed lest at any time the word which we have heard slips out. 2, the ways and means also in which this wretched effect is produced are various, yea, innumerable. Some of them only I shall mention, and to the rest it may be reduced as 1, love of this present world. This made Demas a leaking vessel, 2 Timothy 4:10, and chokes 1/4 part of the seed of the parable, 13. Many might have been rich in grace had they not made it their end and business to be rich in this world, 1 Timothy 6:9. But this is too well known as well as too little regarded. 2, love of sin, a secret lust cherished in the heart will make it full of chinks, that it will never retain the showers of the word, and it will assuredly open them as fast as convictions stop them. 3, false doctrines, errors, heresies, false worship, superstition, and idolatries will do the same. I place these things together as those which work in the same kind upon the curiosity, vanity, and darkness of the minds of men. These break the vessel and at once pour out all the benefits of the word that ever were received, and many the like instances might be given. And this gives us the reason of the necessity of that heeding of the word which we before insisted on. Without it, at one time or other, by one means or other, we shall lose all the design of the word upon our souls. That alone will preserve us and carry us through the course and difficulties of our profession. The duty mentioned, then, is of no less concern to us and our souls, for without it we shall perish. Let us not deceive ourselves. A slothful, negligent hearing of the word will bring no man to life. The commands we have to watch, pray, strive, labor, and fight are not in vain. The warnings given us of the opposition that is made to our faith by indwelling sin, Satan, and the world are not left on record for nothing. No more are the sad examples which we have of many who begin in a good profession have utterly turned aside to sin and folly. All these things, I say, teach us the necessity of the duty which the apostle enjoins and which we have explained. Number three, the word heard is not lost without the great sin as well as the inevitable ruin of the souls of men. Lost it is when it is not mixed with faith, when we don't receive it in good and honest hearts, when the end of it is not accomplished in us and towards us. And this befalls us not without our sin and woeful neglect of duty. The word of its own nature is apt to abide, to incorporate itself with us, and to take root. But we cast it out, we pour it forth from us. And they have a woeful account to make on whose souls the guilt of it shall be found at the last day. Fourthly, it is in the nature of the word of the gospel to water barren hearts and to make them fruitful to God. Hence, as was showed, it is compared to water, dew, and rain, which is the foundation of the metaphorical expression here used, where this word comes. It makes the parched ground a pool and the thirsty land springs of water, Isaiah 35, verse 7. These are the waters of the sanctuary that heal the barren places of the earth and make them fruitful. Ezekiel 47, the river that makes glad the city of God, Psalm 46, 4. That river of living water that comes forth from the throne of God, Revelation 22, 1. And the places and persons which are not healed or benefited by these waters are left to barrenness and burning forevermore. Ezekiel 47:11, Hebrews 6:8. With the dew of this, God waters his church every moment, Isaiah 27:3. And then does it grow as a lily and cast forth its roots as Lebanon, Hosea 14, verses 5 to 7. Abundant fruitfulness to God follows the gracious receiving of this dew from him. Blessed are they who have this dew distilling on them every morning, who are watered as the garden of God, as the land that God cares for. Fifthly, the consideration of the revelation of the gospel by the Son of God is a powerful motive to that diligent attendance to it which we have before described. This is the inference that the apostle makes from the proposition that he had made of the excellency of the Son of God. Therefore, and this is that which in the greatest part of the ensuing chapter he pursues, this is that which God declares that he might so justly expect and look for, namely, that when he sent his Son to the vineyard, he should be regarded and attended to. And this is most reasonable upon many accounts. First, because of the authority in which he spake the word. Others spake and delivered their message as servants. He is the Lord over his own house, Hebrew 3, verse 6. The Father himself gave him all his authority for the revealing of his mind, and therefore proclaimed from heaven that if anyone should have anything to do with God, they were to hear him. Matthew 17:5, 2 Peter 1:17. The whole authority of God was with him, for him did God the Father seal, or he put the stamp of all his authority upon him, and he spake accordingly, Matthew 7:29. And therefore he spoke both in his own name and the name of his Father, so that this authority sprung partly from the dignity of his person. For being God and man, though he spake on the earth, yet he who was the Son of Man was in heaven still. John 3:13. And therefore is said to speak from heaven. Hebrews 12:25. And coming from heaven was still above all. John 3:31. Having power and authority over all. And partly from the commission that he had from his Father, which, as we said before, gave all authority into his hand. John 5:27. Being then in himself the Son of God, and being peculiarly designed to reveal the mind and will of the Father, which the prophet calls his standing and feeding in the strength of the Lord, in the majesty of the name of the Lord is God, Micah 5:4. All the authority of God over the souls and consciences of men is exerted in this revelation of the gospel by him. It cannot then be neglected without the contempt of all the authority of God. And this will be a sore aggravation of the sin of unbelievers and apostates at the last day. If we don't attend to the word on this account, we shall suffer for it. He that despises the word despises him. And he that despises him also who sent him. Number two, because of the love that is in it. There is in it the love of the Father in sending the Son for the revealing of himself and his mind to the children of men. There is also in it the love of the Son himself, condescending to teach and instruct the sons of men who by their own fault were cast into error and darkness. Greater love could not God nor his eternal Son manifest to us than that he should undertake in his own person to become our instructor. 1 John 5:20. He that shall consider the brutish stupidity and blindness of the generality of mankind in the things of God, the miserable fluctuating and endless uncertainties of the more inquiring part of them, and with this the greatness of their concern in being brought to the knowledge of the truth, cannot but in some measure see the greatness of this love of Christ in revealing to us the whole counsel of God. Hence his word and speech are said to be gracious, Luke 4:22. Grace is poured into his lips, Psalm 45:2. And this is no small motive to our attention to the word. 3. The fullness of the revelation itself, by him made to us, is of the same importance. He came not to declare a part or parcel, but the whole will of God. All that we are to know, all that we are to do, all that we are to believe, in him are hid all the treasures of wisdom and knowledge, Colossians 2:3. He opened all the dark sentences of the will of God, hidden from the foundation of the world. There is in his teaching all wisdom, knowledge, light, that is in the sun and water and the sea, there being nothing of the one or the other in any other thing but a communication from them. Now if every word of God is excellent, if every part and parcel of it delivered by any of his servants of old was to be attended to on the penalty of extermination out of the number of his people, how much more will our condition be miserable, as now are our blindness and obstinacy, if we don't have a heart to attend to the full revelation of himself and his will. Or because it is final. Last of all, he sent a son and has spoken to us by him. Nevermore in this world will he speak with that kind of speaking. No further revelation of God is to be expected in this world, but what is made by Jesus Christ. To them we must attend, or we are lost forever. The true and only way of honoring the Lord Christ as the Son of God is by diligent attendance and obedience to his word. The apostle, having evidenced his glory as the Son of God, makes this his only inference from it. So does he himself. If you love me, he says, keep my commandments. Where there is no obedience to the word, there is neither faith in nor love to Jesus Christ. But this whole argument the apostle further pursues in the following verses of chapter 2. John Owen on Hebrews, a classic Puritan commentary. This is a narrated Puritan, puritanaudiobooks.com.